cause I can't get much stronger. Man, I've been waiting all night now. That's how long I've been on ya.
McKenna with a shot, Tim score! Is up 5-2.
Bad when the presence of greatness. Because right now, that has forsaken us.
McKenna centers it. Here's Hayes with the backhand shot. Ripping it down. Rebound score. Gavin McKenna finally cashes. And it's 6-3.
You can't tell who made this new gospel. Homie, take six. And take this, haters.
Canada will lead this World Junior Championship with a bronze medal.
Act like I never told you.
Canada wins bronze. Good morning. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday morning. Sweden wins the gold medal at the World Juniors yesterday. That'll be part of what we chat about today. We got a lot of tough things to talk about settling into a Tuesday, and the weather is going to treat us nicely here as we ease into January. Over the next week, back to almost plus temperatures. Today, not so much, but over the next few days, we will be seeing that as well. Lots to talk about. I mentioned, of course, further discussion. This started as a news story during our show yesterday. Krista Freeland's new role with the country of Ukraine. Some criticism coming her way, not for accepting it, but not, I think the criticism comes from her not stepping down from her role as MP first. So we'll talk a little bit about that on Open Lines. Should we have in Canada a guaranteed annual income for farmers? I read this story just before Christmas. This is being brought about by the National Farmers Union. They're lobbying the federal government that this should happen. I've got a couple of guests, including one from the National Farmers Union. And then I want to open up the phone lines to hear from you. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Also, an option for that tattoo that you got you wish you hadn't. Yes, there is a company in our province offering the ability to remove it for you, or at least cover it up. We'll talk a bit about that. And of course, we'll continue to talk about Venezuela. A couple of guests. In fact, that's where we're headed with our big talker today.
Let's get down to business, shall we?
Welcome. Let's begin.
The Evan Bray Show. The Big Talker.
So we talked about this a fair bit yesterday. Obviously, it was a big part of the show. Under the cover of darkness, U.S. forces moved in, air power overhead, intelligence guiding every step, special forces on the ground, and in a precise military action, one of the ones that probably will stand out for years to come in Latin America. The U.S. operation in Venezuela ended with their de facto president, the person who refused to leave the president's office, Nicolas Maduro, and his wife taken into custody. They were in front of a judge yesterday in a U.S. courtroom. Maduro declared himself a decent man, insisted he's still the president of Venezuela, pleaded not guilty to federal drug trafficking charges. What does this operation tell us about modern wars? Has the needle moved? What are the legal grounds for this type of exercise? We talked a little bit about that yesterday, but when we heard about this, there's a few people that popped into my mind who I thought, I want to hear what so-and-so has to say about this. And my next guest was definitely one of the first I thought of, former Canadian Chief of Defense Staff, General Rick Hillier, who we've had on this program before and graciously gives us some time again this morning. General Hillier, thanks for joining us this morning.
Evan, my pleasure. Thank you.
So maybe just start with your thoughts when you heard the news Saturday morning that this operation had taken place.
Way to go. That guy was an illegal president. He had refused to let go of power. He was the cause of quite literally millions of Venezuelans having to leave their country because of repression, fear, arrest, potentially torture, and poverty. And he did not belong there. The Venezuelans wanted him out. And my first thought were, hey, listen to the expatriate Venezuelans. Listen to what they're saying. And they were cheering the removal of Maduro. And that's where I am, too. I think it's right.
They're throwing parades. There's definitely, you see the expats in our country, in the United States, very, very happy. Thousands of them celebrating this for sure. Can you talk about this, General Hillier, from the military perspective? How coordinated, how in-depth, how organized must this operation have been?
Well, we've all known that for decades the United States has been spending billions with a capital B on their defense forces and building capabilities. And if you ever wondered whether or not that was going to end up actually being operational capability or just more big ships and more planes and more battalions, then wonder no more. This was you know, this was PhD level work. It was a long time in the planning. There are always plans for these kinds of operations, but they lay out just the basic structure. For example, when the Canadian Forces helped out in COVID, they were going by a plan that we had put together when I was Chief of Defense Staff, you know, 14 years, 12 years previously. So there are always plans on the shelf, but then as you get closer that, yes, you might do this, you take those plans out and you update them. It is literally from space to subsea and everything in between that you have to do. So this is complex planning. You have to bring in the forces. You have to do the pattern of life with the intelligence piece here and get that down pat. You have to recognize where the threats are. And then you have to recognize what is your actual mission. Is it to go and get this guy and his wife, or the rest of the top of the government? Or is it to kill them? Or is it to do something differently? So clarifying that mission is always, always absolutely crucial. And then lastly, and I know you want to talk about this, you want to clarify where you stand legally. And for that reason, you're always surrounded by hundreds of lawyers who are ready to offer their opinions based on their study of the situation on what is right and what is wrong and what is legal and what is not legal and what is a gray area, because usually most of it is a gray area.
So that brings up a great point. General Rick Hillier is my guest. We did talk a bit about that yesterday. And my take on it is I don't have military experience, but I use police experience to say I've never seen a mission without, number one, a clear identification of what the mission is, and number two, a clear identification of the legal authority to execute the mission. That would have been in place. The military in the United States would not have taken this step had they not felt confident that they were on legal ground to do it. Am I correct?
I believe that is absolutely correct. I mean, these are people who are professionals, and they operate based on ethics, those people in uniform, those commanders. And they execute the mission when it's legal, when their orders are right and legal. And so they are very careful to get the opinions. But I just go back to what I said. There's a huge gray area in every part of any mission that you'll ever do. And you'll get as many opinions as you have lawyers, you know, offering those opinions to you. And at some point in time as a commander, you have to make a decision and decide whether or not you're going to execute and do it based on the best legal advice available. Let me just give you one little example. Very, very close to home as a Canadian commander in Afghanistan with rules of engagement. And if you listen to some folks, you could not engage somebody unless they were actually shooting at you and you had already taken casualties. If you listen to other folks, you could engage them as soon as you saw somebody that was holding a weapon or saw somebody that was in an area where they should not be and did not respond to your direction. So you had a wide spectrum of rules of engagement. And at some point as commander and as chief of defense staff, I had to make those decisions, as does other chief of defense staff and commanders. And so you get a gray area. They got that kind of legal advice. The commanders made their decision. This was a legal operation and executed it upon the orders of the commander in chief, the president.
General Rick Hillier is my guest. President Trump on Saturday morning said there's no other military in the world that could have executed this mission other than the U.S. military. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, it's a very fair statement. The assets and the resources, and whether that's space forces or cyber forces that took down the electrical apparatus and shut off the power right at the crucial moment, or whether that's the intelligence that was developed both on the ground and through cyber intelligence, and whether that's the integrated forces standing offshore ready to project power, or whether that's the evacuation capabilities, all of those things come to play, and no other country brings those forces together with that kind of detail, that kind of integration. And I tell you one thing, I think it bodes well that we have just in Canada, for example, established the Canadian Joint Forces Command, because this was all about air, land, sea, space, subsea, special forces operating and working together based on real actionable intelligence. And I think that we doing what we're doing with the Joint Forces Command in Canada is a great thing to be able to do here. So this is complex business.
I appreciate that perspective, General Hillier, because one of the questions I had for you is, does this put pressure on Canada, on other U.S. allies, even if they weren't directly involved in this one, to say, you know what, we better step up our game? And I think that's where you were going with your last comments there.
Well, it is really that we have to step up our game, and we've started doing that. It's going to take a while. You know, we started doing that. We have a good capability on the special forces capability and some other pieces, but we don't have those numbers, and we don't have those all those capabilities put together, and we certainly haven't brought them together in that detail yet. But we are on the way to doing some of those things.
We had you on the show a couple of months back after the United States was involved in the bombing of that Iraq nuclear facility. Can you talk about the difference between those missions? You know, the Iraq one, I've seen it categorized as a bit of a hit and run. They go in, they do it, and they leave. This one, it may be a bit more sticky for the U.S. military because they may be involved for some time yet.
Yeah, and you're right. The first one was really go in and strike and come on home. You don't have anybody on the ground. You're not leaving anybody on the ground. And you live with the results of your strike, which, you know, the U.S. and Israel have been doing, obviously, and contemplating what might be required down the road. For this one, I don't think everybody's talking about how difficult, how challenging it is going to be. It might not necessarily be that difficult and that challenging. It might be as simple as putting a special envoy, a U.S. ambassador of significant credibility next to the president of Venezuela and say, you know, hey, you're going to lead a country here that's going to do things based on the rule of law. We talked about the rule of law and being a responsible member of the international community. And you're not going to be an illegal government. And you need to do that because if you don't, you don't want to sort of live with the consequences. And it might be as simple as that. It might be more complex. It might require troops on the ground. I would think that's the last thing the United States wants to do is get significant numbers of troops of any kind on the ground in Venezuela. I kind of think we're probably a ways away from that. An initial reaction of people in Caracas and those who are in and around the government of Venezuela, I think indicates that it might be a more cooperative approach with the United States than what we anticipated.
You talk about the rule of law, and we know there's international law, and many people, many countries, including allies of the United States, have been critical of this mission, saying that it was offside with international law. Can you talk about your perspective on precedent? And I'm not using precedent in a good or a bad way. Does this set a precedent? Does this signal anything to the rest of the world?
I think it does signal to the rest of the world that if you pose a threat in any way, shape, or form to the United States of America, be prepared for the consequences. And you know, it comes back to what I said about rules of engagement. Do you wait till somebody is there trying to kill you or shooting at you and killed your buddy before you are permitted to engage? No, you take out that threat beforehand and you identify it in a variety of ways. So if you identify that the president of a country illegally occupying that office after elections that he had lost, based on the international assessment, is causing drugs to be shipped to, you know, the United States and Canada and killing literally thousands of people, that is a threat to your country. If you've assessed that, if you've done the proper legal justification, I think you're absolutely justified in taking out a threat like that. And yes, does it send a clear message that you're not going to sit around and wait for people to come and destroy the fabric of your society? You're actually going to respond or act first.
Last question, General Hillier, is does this pose a threat? Does it send a message? Does it set a precedent to countries that don't pose a threat but potentially have assets that the United States is interested in? We've seen President Trump muse about Greenland again recently here in the last couple of days. Do we have anything to worry about in Canada?
Well, I think we got many things in Canada to worry about, but what not included in that is a military threat from the United States of America. I think we should worry about our economy and whether we're diversifying across the country with trade between provinces that is unfettered and unencumbered, and whether we can diversify into Europe more and into Asia more, and whether we can invest in our defense and security and actually protect and defend and strengthen our sovereignty ourselves as a responsible G7 nation. I think that's what we should be worried about. Get our own act together. Never mind worrying about the Americans. I'm not worried about a military threat to Canada from the United States of America.
General Hillier, always appreciate you joining the show. Thanks again for your time.
Evan, my pleasure. Thank you.
Former Canadian Chief of Defense Staff, General Rick Hillier. And like I said, when I watched this go down, literally I was watching the news conference on Saturday morning with U.S. President Donald Trump, and I thought, we have to get the general on the show. And he didn't disappoint. Never does. Always appreciate his perspective for sure. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.